I'm here on the job site with Dale, who's a framing contractor.
Hey, good morning.
Dale traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance for all his business vehicles. We're here where he needs us most.
Yep, they sure are.
We make it easy for him to save on all his insurance needs, all in one place, with coverage that fits his business and bottom line. Oh, I shouldn't have looked down.
It's all right.
We're so far up here.
Look at me. Take a deep breath.
No, I'm good. So good.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at Geico.com and see how much you could save. Get more with Geico.
Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who pieced together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast, premiering Wednesday, October 1st. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.
Here on Stolen Lives, we discuss brutal and heartbreaking crimes against children. Themes may include child murder, torture, and sexual, domestic, and child abuse. I do try my best to remain respectful for the babies in these stories and leave out unnecessary details that, honestly, none of us need to know to understand the frustration of why and how this ever happened. However, if you find any of these themes triggering, this podcast may not be for you. Listener discretion is advised. This week's episode is a listener suggestion. Thank you to Katie for bringing April's story to my attention. Our phones track us most of the time, from counting every step we take to what we are doing and where we are doing it, from the strangely specific advertisements on social media to perfect recommendations on YouTube. Our phones seem to know us scarily well. However, in this case, the victim's phone and its tracking is what brought her killer to justice. July 2014, Amada, Michigan. 14-year-old April Millsap went out for her regular evening stroll with her dog Penny in tow, just as she had countless times before. However, on this occasion, only one would return home, April having no way of knowing this would be her last walk ever. This is April's story.
Police continue to scour the village of Armada looking for 14-year-old April Millsap's killer. April was killed Thursday evening near Fulton and Depot Road. 7 Action News reporter Tara Edwards live with the very latest tonight. Tara.
Well, Jeff, as police are searching for the killer, a lot of residents around here are really hoping that the person responsible is brought to justice soon. And we're seeing a lot of these pop up around town. Pink ribbons around businesses and homes for April.
April Millsap was born January 2, 2000, to parents Jennifer and Bobby Millsap. She would be the couple's only child. Jennifer and Bobby were divorced when April was still only a toddler. And then in 2006, when April was 6 years old, Jennifer would marry a man named David. April saw David as a second dad, a bonus dad. And by the time this story takes place, David had been in April's life basically half her life. The two were really close and had a special bond. April had the perfect upbringing, really, in the small town of Armada, Michigan. And Armada is a small town and is also referred to as a village, with a population of about 1,700 people and located about 35 miles outside of Detroit. Armada was and still is considered extremely safe. I mean, nowhere is crime-free. But it is a place where children could go outside and play without fear, where violent crime was pretty much unheard of. But all of that would change one summer afternoon in 2014. In July 2014, when our story takes place, 14-year-old April was enjoying her summer before high school. She was active in the church and very sporty. She was friendly and well-liked. She never caused any trouble for her parents. She hadn't gone through that rebellious stage yet, which I keep hearing in these only child stories. Maybe that's the key. Only have one child. Just kidding if my children are listening to this episode. Jennifer adored her daughter and would later say that April just completed her life, describing April as being the sunshine in their lives. April was close to her family, especially her grandfather who lived in Florida. The county fair was coming to town towards the end of summer break, and that was an occasion that April was really excited about, because her grandfather was coming to town to go with her. April was considered to be quite artsy. She enjoyed writing short stories and poetry. She was just your normal, typical teenage girl. April loved shopping and makeup and hanging out with her friends. Thursday, July 24, 2014. It was summer vacation. The summer before, April would start high school, and April was taking full advantage. Sleeping until about midday on this day, and then spending the afternoon in her bedroom on her computer, chatting with friends. April would take the family dog, a border collie named Penny, on a walk most days. Penny was officially the family dog, but David would later state everyone, including Penny, knew the dog was April's. She was the one who took responsibility to look after the dog since day one, and the daily walks along the popular Macomb Orchard Trail was just one of those tasks April took on. On this day, April was putting off going for a walk, but Penny was getting a little bit overexcited, so about 6 p.m, April told Jennifer she was taking Penny for a walk around the trail. This was never a super long walk. Generally, April and Penny would only be gone for maybe half an hour or so. But on this occasion, April would never return home. About 6:30 p.m, April's boyfriend, 15-year-old Austin, was waiting at a McDonald's drive-thru for his meal. He got a panicked text message from April, quote, "I think I almost got kidnapped. Oh my fucking God," unquote. Not sure if she was joking or not, Austin tried calling his girlfriend back but got no answer. Unsure what else to do, he called April's mother, Jennifer. Jennifer felt in her gut that something was off too. She also tried calling her daughter, but there was no answer. All her calls were going through to voicemail. Panic was starting to set in because April wasn't back. She was never gone this long and not answering her phone when, like any other teenager, April had her phone glued to her hand. About this time, David had come home from work, and Austin was going to meet them at the trail. The three of them went together to search for April and Penny. We are just going to take a quick break now for a word from one of our sponsors.
Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast, premiering Wednesday, October 1st. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.
Sometime after 7 p.m., a young couple walking the same trail as April was surprised by a dog who was clearly distressed, pacing back and forth ahead of them. The dog started barking at them. Now, dogs can make me a little nervous sometimes too, so they were trying to be safe and just gave the dog a wide berth, not knowing if the dog was aggressive or sick or something like that. On their way back down along the trail at the end of their hike, the couple would pass the dog again. This caught their curiosity. It seemed odd the dog had not run off and had stayed in the exact same spot as they'd seen him maybe an hour earlier. They stopped to investigate, and they saw something just off of the trail in some woods. Something that looked like a doll or a mannequin. But as we know, it's never a mannequin. The couple had stumbled across the body of a young woman, and it was immediately obvious she had not fallen and hurt herself accidentally. This was a brutal and bloody crime scene. Officers from the Ameda Police Department were quickly on the scene. This was a lot for them. As I mentioned before, Ameda is such a small town and it was relatively safe. The Ameda Police Department knew they were in over their heads and called in the Michigan State Police for assistance. And they arrived on the scene only minutes after. April's death was determined to be that of a homicide. It was clear April had been beaten to death. The right side of April's face and neck bore the imprints of a sole of what appeared to be track shoes. There also seemed to be an unsuccessful attempt at a sexual assault. April's top had been torn, as were her shorts and underwear, which were pulled down around her ankles. However, no semen was found on or near April's body and clothing. Curiously, the cell phone April had with her at all times was missing. In total, April's autopsy revealed that she suffered from 48 injuries during the vicious attack. including numerous bruises to her face, neck and upper torso. It was also evident that her killer had stomped on her with such force that he had crushed her windpipe. April's official cause of death was determined to be due to asphyxiation and blunt force trauma to the head. Around this time, April's parents and Austin were walking the trail and they noticed all the police activity. Jennifer ran straight to them, telling them that her daughter was missing and explaining what April had been wearing. The police knew that April was their murder victim. Jennifer was taken to the police station, where she was tragically informed that a body had been found on the trail, and that the police believed that body belonged to April. The investigation into April's murder was exceptional. Police were on the ground working hard from the get-go, not wasting any time looking for evidence and questioning witnesses. The FBI were invited and they became involved within 24 hours, going door-to-door showing sketches and asking questions. In total, more than 100 police officers from various agencies were assigned to find April's killer.
This morning, Armada Township fire shut down Oma Road between Armada Ridge Road and the trail as FBI agents searched for evidence in Millsap's murder. Brandon Schindler watched from his front yard.
I don't know if they're looking for more evidence or what's going on, but it's kind of crazy.
FBI agents used metal detectors to look for answers.
We were looking for a couple articles that we believed April had with her.
Police say the articles are not clothing and are tight-lipped about the evidence.
Now, of course, April's family and boyfriend were looked into initially as potential suspects. Normal procedure here. Jennifer and David were quickly ruled out as being involved. But Austin definitely had the attention of police for a time. And there are a couple of reasons for this. When Austin was interviewed, he said that he and April's relationship was kind of rocky at the time, and that they had had an argument earlier that day. However, police were quickly able to confirm his alibi from the surveillance footage at the McDonald's drive-thru. He also later passed a polygraph. Tips with valuable information started flooding in. A father who was on the Macomb Orchard Trail with his two daughters that day. They would claim to have seen April Millsap and her dog, but she wasn't alone. She was also with a middle-aged man who was on a blue and white motorcycle wearing a black helmet. And a mother and daughter who had been out riding their bicycles along the path that evening had a similar story. They too had witnessed April and her dog talking to a man wearing a black helmet and sitting on an off-road bike. They really didn't think that much of it at the time, and by the time they had circled back along the trail a few minutes later, they saw the motorcycle parked on the side of the path, but there was no sign of the dog or the two people they had seen earlier. The police considered these tips credible and were now actively investigating them.
In other news tonight, new developments in the murder of an Armada teen. Police want to know if you recognize this man. Investigators are calling him a person of interest and want to talk with him. Police say they've already ruled out April's family as suspects.
The witnesses were also able to give a fairly detailed description of the man. And from that, police made up a composite sketch of their suspect. He had short, curly hair. He was tall and slender, and he was seen riding a small blue and white motorcycle in the area at the time of April's murder. Police also released a photo of a white or grey box van, which was also seen in the area. Two men were in the van. They weren't necessarily suspects, but police were hopeful that maybe these men saw something of interest. Locals were obviously scared. As I said, Armada was only a small and tight-knit community. And the trail where April was murdered was a popular trail. There were always people there walking or jogging. Was their sleepy little town no longer safe? Was someone they all knew harbouring some dark secret? Police did their best to calm public panic by stating they believed this to be an isolated incident, not the work of some crazed serial killer. But this didn't make sense. Who would target a sweet 14-year-old, a child? A prayer vigil was held with hundreds of people in attendance, sharing memories they had with April.
As detectives continue to investigate tips and leads into who killed 14-year-old April Millsap, we're getting a clearer picture of what kind of person she was. We're told she was a young woman of faith who was kind to all around her, and that's making her death more difficult for loved ones to understand. The chorus of voices lifting up song and prayer, proof that a beloved teenager left a lasting impression in this community.
April was the kindest girl anyone could meet. She was friends with everyone, and she had a wonderful and beautiful personality.
More than 200 people gathered at St. Mary Mystical Rose Church in Armada to remember 14-year-old April Millsap.
Police were out in force with canine units, trying to pick up April's scent in an effort to find more evidence that could lead them to her killer. The dogs tracked April's scent to a driveway just off the main road, about a mile and a half drive away from where April was found. But if you go via the trail, it really is only about a quarter of a mile, with the trail's path leading straight to this driveway, and the driveway would connect to a large property. Here police would find April's cell phone. Now the people who owned this property were not involved in what happened to April, and they cooperated with the police, allowing them full access to search their home and property. We are just going to take a quick break now for a word from one of our sponsors.
Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast. Premiering Wednesday, October 1st. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.
In an incredible stroke of luck, several days after the murder, an Armada police officer was driving to the police station from a neighbouring town when he happened to see a blue and white motorcycle parked in a driveway just off the main road. Doubling back, he got out of his cruiser and snapped several photos of this bike before heading into work. These photos were shown to the witnesses on the day April was murdered, and they all positively identified the bike as the same as the one with the man who was walking next to April on the trail. After running the plates through the system, officials discovered the bike belonged to 34-year-old James Vincalis. What's more, they noticed he bore a strong resemblance to the composite sketch of the suspect, and Vincalis was brought in for questioning about his whereabouts on the evening of July 24, 2014. Vincalis would allege he left home around 5 p.m. to go visit his brother. He admitted to passing through Armada, but never stopped until he reached his destination, arriving shortly after 6 p.m. and stayed for around an hour and a half. And then he drove straight back home, again without stopping. The following day, police returned to talk to Vincalis some more, to make sure they didn't miss anything and to ask him to write a statement. Vincalis completely shut down and he was not cooperative with any further questioning, saying he had better things to do, which was strange to investigators because he was initially when asked for an alibi, because the investigators were granted a warrant to search his residence, located 15 miles outside of Armada, and this search occurred July 30th, 2014. Unfortunately, authorities didn't find anything linking him to April's murder, but instead they would end up taking Vincalis in on drug possession. They did turn up a number of marijuana plants that were being illegally grown in his home. Vincalis did have a criminal record, not necessarily for any violent crimes, but apparently he had been arrested and charged with breaking and entering, and also failing to pay child support. But while they didn't have anything to link him to the murder, the investigators were sure this was their guy. So while he was being held on unrelated charges, they started to dig deeper in hopes to solve the mystery of April Millsap's murder. And the investigators really had their work cut out for them. The crime scene had little to no evidence, but they were determined to bring some justice for April and her family. After months of investigating the case, the authorities would uncover some telling details. Details that would come in the form of cell phone data, and this data would come from an unlikely source. The investigators had found that April's fitness tracker not only tracked April's location, but it also recorded the last minutes of her life. The heart rate tracker data revealed that April had been walking normally along the trail, until abruptly her heart rate rose sharply. The fact that the spike was just after the surveillance video of her coming face to face with a stranger, this seemed to confirm the theory that she'd been either shocked or had been attacked by her killer. However, the data from this tracker was not only that April had indeed continued moving on for some time after her heart rate peaked, but also that she'd been alive and struggled against her attacker. Police also searched Venkalis's search history and found that he had made some very disturbing Google searches. Searching terms like girls like older men, how to have sex with a girl, how to attract younger women, why do younger girls become interested in older men? Investigators also found videos on Venkalis's cell phone that he had filmed of teenage girls without their knowledge, of these girls walking down the street. It was clear that Venkalis had some sick fantasy about becoming involved with a teenager. The issue was, even though police had this information, they had no physical evidence linking the murder to Venkalis. But what they would come to find was surveillance footage pulled from the gas station, a gas station in the same area in which April's phone was pinging from. But again, outside of this, they had nothing. There were no fingerprints, no DNA. It wouldn't be until someone close to Venkalis would prove his undoing. Venkalis's girlfriend, Crystal Stadler, had been present when police attempted to question him about his involvement. She saw when asked what shoes he was wearing that evening, he produced a pair of K-Swiss tennis shoes, shoes whose soles did not match the imprints found on April. At the time of the interview, Crystal didn't say anything. She was frightened by Venkalis, who had threatened to hurt her in the past. But she knew what he was saying wasn't honest, because she had seen him that night wearing a different pair of shoes, Nike Air Flight gym shoes. She remembered it clearly, because that night he had gotten home later than usual, and then spent a decent amount of time in the bathroom cleaning the shoes with soap and hand sanitizer, something he had never done before. That even though she knew these shoes were his favourites, he never wore them again, and then they seemingly vanished before the police arrived to search the home. Even though the police didn't have these actual shoes, authorities could prove Venkalis did own a pair of Nike Air Flights. And this is where society's obsession with posting everything on social media worked to the investigators' advantage. They found photos on Venkalis's social media account of him wearing these shoes Crystal described. Working on a hunch, they purchased an identical pair and compared the soles of these shoes to the marks left on April's body. To the surprise of no one, these patterns were a match.
The case has consumed the small village of Armada in Macomb County since April's body was found in July. Tomorrow, James Venkalis Jr. will be arraigned on charges of first-degree murder and attempted rape.
The Macomb County prosecutor says the charges are the result of an exhaustive investigation.
Once you clear 1,000 tips and so many suspects, and the only thing that keeps popping up is James Venkalis.
With the evidence piling up against him, James Venkalis was arrested on October 8, 2014 and charged with murder, kidnapping and the attempted rape of 14-year-old April Millsap. And then, on January 20, 2016, Venkalis's criminal trial began.
Crystal Stadler was living with James Venkalis at the time April Millsap was murdered along the Macomb Orchard Trail. She details in court how Venkalis was out of the house at the time April was killed and how when her then-boyfriend returned home, he was acting really weird. For starters, she woke up in the middle of the night to see him cleaning his shoes, something he never did, and then...
Does he say anything to you when he comes back to bed?
Yeah, that he messed up and he needed me to stand by his side.
Stadler's testimony gets worse for Venkalis, saying he asked her to wash his clothes, something that never happened. And?
Did you find something unusual in the Carhartt jacket after you washed it?
Yeah.
What was it that you found?
Like wadded up hair and like shavings of grass or like hay.
Hair that she says belonged to a person, not an animal. And then Stadler says Venkalis asked everybody in the house to lie about what kind of shoes he had on the day the young girl was killed.
What was he telling to everybody in the house?
To tell them that he was wearing K-Swiss shoes.
Was he wearing K-Swiss shoes that night?
No.
Back here live, what else struck her as strange about the whole shoe thing? When she woke up in the middle of the night and says she saw him washing his shoes, he was cleaning them with hand sanitizer.
In a trial that lasted a month, Venkalis's now former girlfriend, understandably, Crystal Stadler, was a star witness. The prosecution arguing that Venkalis had come upon April as she was walking her dog along the trail. He was obviously taken with her. The 14-year-old was extremely beautiful, and he stopped her to start a conversation with her and he made his move. despite it being incredibly inappropriate given he was two decades older than her and April was a minor. April rejected Vancallis's advances, obviously. And it was around this time she would have sent the text message to her boyfriend joking about being almost kidnapped. But the rejection enraged Vancallis and decided that April no longer had a choice. He was going to have her. Before April knew what was happening, he had taken off his helmet and hit her on the side of the head, an injury that was supported by the autopsy. April fell to the ground. And this was all very bold of Vancallis to do this on the trail because it was always populated. He was taking a huge risk not to be seen, which we know he wasn't successful with. But after dragging her off the path, he attempted to rape her but was unable to do so. And due to his non-performance, he decided to take that out on April. In a fit of temper, he stomped repeatedly on her face and torso, leaving behind visible shoe prints in the process. The attack being so violent that he crushed her windpipe, causing April to suffocate to death. He had then grabbed her cell phone and fled the scene, discarding the evidence several miles away in the hopes that it would lead authorities on a wild goose chase. And that would be correct for a time. February 20th, 2016, after 6 hours of deliberation, the jury found James Vancallis guilty of first-degree murder, first-degree felony murder, kidnapping and intent to rape, receiving a life sentence without the possibility of parole.
April Millsap was murdered more than a year and a half ago, and finally today, her mother got to look straight at the convicted killer and speak her mind.
I pity you, and I hate you, and I can never forgive you.
An emotional morning for Jennifer Millsap as she addressed James Vancallis, the man convicted of brutally murdering her daughter April in the summer of 2014. In a jam-packed courtroom today, some wore pink, April's favorite color. Many wiped away tears as they heard the voice of a heartbroken mother.
April was a beautiful, kind, giving, and loving young lady. You stole April's chance to experience being a wife, a mother. I hope those steel bars are your only friends. I hope when you close your eyes, you see only April. Over and over and over again.
Despite those strong words, James Vancallis showed no remorse. Instead, just claims of innocence.
There is no evidence that shows that I have done anything wrong.
I don't know how to have the Millsap family understand that I don't know her. I've never met her.
Vancallis was sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole.
April's mother, Jennifer, addressed her daughter's killer in her victim impact statement. Quote, "You, James, are a damn thief. You stole my beautiful daughter's life and you stole the rest of mine. My life has totally changed since April was killed. My life will never be the same again. I will always miss April and will continue to hold her in my heart. I never thought this could happen to my daughter or me." Unquote. Many of Vancallis's family protested his innocence, his mother arguing that her son had been framed for this murder by the police. Vancallis did immediately try to appeal against the conviction, however he was unsuccessful. Vancallis will spend the rest of his sad and pathetic life behind bars at the Chippewa Correctional Facility in Michigan's Upper Peninsula.
A ribbon-cutting ceremony officially opened the April Millsap Memorial Garden. It's located along the Macomb Orchard Trail, where the 14-year-old was murdered while she was out walking her dog last July. The garden is filled with flowers and wildlife habitats, and it's intended to be a sanctuary for healing.
The community is in awe. They never expected something quite so large, quite so beautiful. It's amazing to watch people come for the first time and see them just overcome with emotion and weep at the beauty of it and what it means to everybody.
I will always try and end these horrific and heartbreaking stories with some good and positivity. July 2015. The April Millsap Community Garden was created at the opening of the trail April loved so much, but where her life was taken. Here there are pictures of April and a statue of her beloved pooch Penny. Penny, who was able to lead people to April's body that day. Penny, who never left her side. And without that, there is a possibility that April may not have been found and her killer never brought to justice. If you have your own thoughts and theories on the story we discussed today, or any stories we talk about here on Stolen Lives, please search Stolen Lives Podcast on Facebook. Like the page so you don't miss an episode. And join the Stolen Lives discussion group to talk about your thoughts and theories. You can also talk to us on Instagram, Stolen Lives Podcast. If you like what you heard today, we would appreciate it if you share this episode on your social media of choice and subscribe and leave a positive review on your podcast app. I also have a Patreon where for as little as $2 a month, not only would you be supporting my podcast, but you will also receive not only this podcast episode early and ad-free, but all of my podcasts, Love to Death, Mysteriously Listed, and Beyond Your Nightmares, as well as one Patreon-exclusive episode a month. If you are interested and able, I will have the link in the show notes. Today's episode was researched and written by me, Ali. Hosting and production was also by me, Ali. Music is by Mayu.